start. And yep. Welcome to Booked All Night, a podcast about the young adult and middle grade books that keep us up all night. Hosted by myself, Jessica Tuckerman, Magdalene Ann, and Daniel Stanton. Fair warnings include language, spoilers, and rude-ass pets. Subscribe to Booked All Night on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast fix, and make sure to leave a 5-star review of the show before you go. Then, visit bookedallnight.blog for book reviews, blog tours, and roundups. On tonight's episode, we're joined by Katie Hammer, author of Chasing Faye. We are recording on September 12th, 2020. Let's get started. Can you give us a pitch for Chasing Faye, just to kick us off?
Absolutely. So Chasing Faye follows the story of a young mortal woman named Grace. Grace's older brother, Leo, goes off to the Fae's world, the Upper Realm, to serve as mercenary. And she expects him to return with all of the honor and accolades that he deserves. But when Leo dies in a mysterious accident, not a word, medal, or penny comes down from the Fae realm. So Grace suspects that there's a bit of foul play going on here. So she decides she's going to disguise herself as a Fae and sneak into the Upper Realm to get some answers. She anticipates being in way over her head, but the Fae soldier who discovers her true identity only a day in, well, not so much. So now she's forced to drag this Fae soldier, Aiden, along with her as she tries to work out exactly how and why her brother died. There's political conspiracy and demon realm escapades and family secrets that will all lead Grace to the answers that she's looking for, as well as some that she isn't.
Very nice. So our very first question.
That was a hell of a pitch.
Yeah.
That was really good. I'm like preparing for a pitch for like a writer's workshop. And I'm like, oh man, that's a good pacing. Thank you.
Yes. pitches are hard. Nobody like talks about
really hard.
No one talks about how hard blurbs are to write, or like the one paragraph in your query letter is to get off the ground. Like everyone's like, oh, it's fine. You've written 120,000 words already. What's another 100? I'm like, it's really hard because I only have 100. Like,
consolidating is not my strong suit. So
yeah.
It takes weeks to get it down to the right word count.
Yeah. Especially if you're in fantasy, you know, and you have that room because you're like, oh, I can touch everything I want to. And then you have to come into this tiny little letter. But our first question is, was there anything you had to edit out of the story that you wish you could have kept?
Let's see. There were a couple scenes that I would have liked to have a little bit more elaboration on my main character Grace's relationship with her best friend in the mortal realm. But I thought it would make a lot more sense. It didn't make sense with the kind of the directions that the story was going. So I'm hoping to bring a little bit more of that friendship back in the second and the third books.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So that would be the Billy, the gym owner, I'm guessing.
And this is David, black market runner.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because I liked David and I thought he was a good, like, I'm like, because he calls Grace on her bullshit. And I was like, good job, David.
Yes. Yes. He was kind of the voice of reason early in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So this is one of my favorite questions to ask everyone who comes on the show, but what was the weirdest thing that you needed to research for the story?
I love this question.
Oh, this is a great question. Let me think. I think a lot of the weird things that I had to research came in when I was working on the world building, because it's such a complex, the Fae realm particularly is such a complex world. I did a lot of research into types of weaponry, into architecture. I'm trying to think if there's anything like really out there that I did any reading on. I think that's
just tell you that the ones you're trying to beat are killing an octopus with your teeth and cow insemination.
Yeah, nothing out there like that. I did. It's interesting because I did very minimal, like, I guess, hardcore research for this book. A lot of the elements that I enjoy in fantasy came from my favorite books. So it was kind of capturing those elements and reimagining them in kind of a new and different way. that was my main kind of form of quote unquote research.
So there wasn't like, you know, you couldn't just go online and find out about a world you created. They didn't already have the history for that.
I did a lot of research into how to world build. I read probably 100 articles on how to, you know, different approaches to the process of world building. Because this is my first attempt at a fantasy novel. And there's so many more elements to writing fantasy than, you know, than I would have imagined. As I started writing from a young age, and I experimented with, you know, contemporary romance and, you know, middle grade, a little bit of middle grade romance, but I'd never tried fantasy. And there are so many, the world building itself it's a whole other book just to world build.
Yeah, genre fiction's got some hefty world building requirements just for things to make sense. Like,
yes.
That's why I write contemporary, because I just go, it's outside. Just look outside. That's the world.
Yeah. Look outside. That's it. We're here.
Remember when you used to be outside? That's what it was.
That's a fantasy world.
Oh, yeah. God. What does the wind feel like?
Yes.
Yeah. New Jersey actually just started with quarter capacity in restaurants. And I went out to eat, and I'm like, it's almost normal. It's just like a slow day. It's like a slow day, but they have like 50 of the tables covered in saran wrap. It's normal. It's totally normal.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Or last week, like the state next to us has, they're a little more open than we are. And my husband and I actually drove an hour just to go see a movie, because it was the closest movie theater that was open.
Jesus.
And yeah, well, I needed to get out of the house. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I'm normally happy to stay in my house and not socialize with anybody, but like, it has definitely taken its toll, and I'm ready for things to go back to normal. So I need everyone to wear their masks so that we can get back to normal faster.
Yes, please.
Yes. Wear your mask, wash your hands.
Yeah.
So I don't go on my long rants about COVID. The next question. So, Kate, are you a junior now or a senior?
I'm a junior at college right now.
All right, so you're still a junior at College of William & Mary, and I know you study history and you're minoring in anthropology, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I know you've said like how that helps with your world building and whatnot.
Absolutely.
And so like in other interviews, you're very knowledgeable about the writing process. Like you have one where you give like a workshop on how to create characters. And so I was wondering if, if you've studied creative writing, and like, what does your writing process look like?
Okay. So I love answering this question. Because this writing process is very different from, other stories that I attempted in the past. I started Chasing Faye as a part of NaNoWriMo in 2018. It was my first time doing NaNoWriMo, and the pace of it, you know, having to write 50,000 words in 30 days is no small feat. It takes concentration. It takes some real kind of plowing through the writing a little bit. And turns out that was what I needed. Most of my first draft attempts in the past, I was too heavy on self-editing myself during the first draft, which you should not do. It makes the whole process go slower. But being able to kind of forcing yourself to kind of write and write through the scene in the first draft was something that was really important to kind of getting to those final words. So my first drafts, my new first draft technique is to set a time frame and just write. Just write straight through. Don't go back. Even if you know something is off, it can all be fixed kind of in the next subsequent drafts.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I put aside the draft for 2 weeks, and 2 weeks is like the low end of when, you know, is kind of the lower end of some authors put aside their books for months, but I just can't tear myself away from it that long. 2 weeks is is the bare minimum and my max on how long I can stay away from a draft. And from there, during revisions, I read through, I make notes in the margins, sometimes on a computer, sometimes in a notebook. I'm a collector of notebooks, a really like really nice like leather covered notebooks. So I've got a bunch of those that are filled up with
it's the only way to be a writer.
And revising is the is the longest period of time, six to eight months of revising for I guess Chasing Fae went through five drafts before the first round of querying, and then six drafts before I submitted it to my publisher. And it's all about, I really love revising. Revising is my favorite part of the writing process because I can really see the transformation of the story between drafts, and each draft kind of has a different objective. You know, it's fixing the plot, it's fixing the characters. Somewhere around three and four, I'm focusing more on details, getting more, you know, getting more emotion, getting more, more of the five senses into the world building. And then somewhere between draft two and three and four and five, I have beta readers take a look at it. I have my boyfriend read between two and three because he's a reader of fantasy, and I know he'll call me out when there's something wrong with it. I know he'll tell me exactly what needs to be fixed. He'll, you know, he'll be nice about it, but he'll tell me that it's, you know, there are some things that absolutely need to be changed. And I really appreciate that in, you know, in a beta reader. And then I usually pass it along to one of my writing friends or sometimes one of my college friends to take a look at it as I'm getting closer to what the final, the quote unquote final will be before I start pitching.
Is that final one, final two, final three, final four?
I didn't think it would be like that, but it absolutely is, and it can't be any other way. There's always where you think the final is, and then kind of 3 months later, and you're like, actually, that's not quite the final draft, and then fix it again. And then once you get into the publishing process, your supposed final draft's really like your third draft. It's back further.
At the very least, it's your third draft.
Yes, yeah, at the very least.
So that actually brings us to our very first game, which is Never Have I Ever Spoiled My Own Book. So we'll read through 10 very common scenarios for writers and readers. And if you have done five or more, you have to give us a spoiler for Chasing Fae.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
So our very first, Never Have I Ever. Never have I ever spent time organizing my desk to avoid drafting.
Never done that.
Wow.
I've been thinking about this one. I don't clean up my desk. I clean up my room. Like, I was thinking about this the other day about how, like, we asked this, and I'm like, I've never done that. Huh. But then I'm like, as I'm like doing laundry instead of like working on my book, I'm like, yes, I do. It's just not my desk desk.
Who was it? We had one guest on, we asked that, and they were like, I don't do that. So my writing's not done and my house is a mess.
That's not right. I mean, my organization is, I'm good at small scale organization, like organizing my school day, organizing, you know, backpack, but everything else it's just not happening.
Small scale, you know, yes, between an entire day,
right,
or a backpack. All right, so number two, never have I ever spent more than an hour stressing over whether or not one line should stay or go.
Ooh, not one line, so that's a no. I definitely like a scene, but never one specific line.
Never have I ever stared at a blank screen daydreaming about what my characters might do instead of writing.
Oh, that's a yes. That's a definite yes. That's most of my day.
There's times right now I'm going through edits and I'm like, wait a second, I thought he, you know, I thought Sean did XYZ, and I'm like, oh no, that was just a note I wrote down and then told my sister about it. And then like, it never makes its way in. And I'm like, oh, good thing that wasn't super important and exposed. It's like deep, dark desires. Like,
I'll play out the whole scene in my head for like a half hour to an hour. And then the next day I'll be like, where's that scene that I wrote? And I'm like, no, I never wrote it. It's still not on paper yet.
like even worse, like if you come like one step away from that and like you did make notes while you were daydreaming, but your notes are like, one, they're chicken scratch because you weren't really looking at the page. You were just like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And you go back to look at them and your notes are like written by a completely different person. And you're like, no, I had a good idea. I did have an idea, I swear.
Why did I circle the word orange 17 times?
Yes, exactly. Why did I circle this word? Why is this word important?
Yeah.
Why didn't I just tell myself why this word was important?
It's almost worse when it's like that sleepy time, like right before bed, you're about to fall asleep and you're like, no, I have to make a note. I won't remember this because like I do this a lot where like I'll draft in my head. So it'll be like I'll be driving or I'll be laying in bed and I'll be like, okay, so this is how I'm going to write the next chapter. And like I'll be narrating it in my head and I'll be like, oh, I should get up and write this down. And then my body's like, nah, you'll remember it. It'll be fine. And I wake up in the morning and I just go, fuck.
I keep my phone next to my bed to make those, you know, 1 a.m., 1, 2 o'clock a.m. notes.
Yep. I have definitely sent people my notes and been like, this is what I mean. Make sure that I do it.
My favorite is when I took a note for you and I sent it to you. So sometimes I'll still see that note on my, like, in my draft folders. It'll just be like, notes for Jesse. And the title is intubation tubes. And I'm like, what the what was this note that we took? I don't understand.
I remember what that was for. That was for Beneath Still Waters for my thesis piece.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
That was important.
It was important. That was for the breeding program that instead of her getting pregnant, they were just kind of like cowed into different tubes. I remember that. See? So this is why it's important for other people to take your notes.
Right.
Pro tip. That's going to be in all of our craft books. Hire someone else to write your notes down for you.
Yes.
When you're starting out, get someone else to do it.
Ply them with pumpkin spice lattes.
Yeah.
You know how to get to my heart, Jesse.
I do.
Back to the game. Never have I ever had a Google search history worthy of an NSA raid.
No, my Google search history for my research is boring.
What does an economy look like on the
I think that actually might be my search history.
Right? Yeah. It was like, who was it that Rob Rufus, when we interviewed him, he said that he was Googling like latex, like how much to buy like a latex sex doll. Because he was trying to figure it out for a story he was working on, and then like his girlfriend saw it and was like, why are you looking at this question?
Yeah, questions. I have questions.
Yes. Something like that. Yeah. Oh, I'm next. Never have I ever written stories based on headlines.
No, never done that.
Okay. Never have I ever gotten the best idea. Never have I ever gotten the best idea for a story while sitting in class.
That's happened. I'm probably going to wrap myself out to all of my former high school teachers listening to this, but my senior year, there was a lot of note-taking for the world building of Chasing Faye happening during class on my iPad.
Oh, yeah. I don't know any writer who didn't spend math class writing their notes instead of, you know.
Oh yeah. Work.
Oh, I liked math, so I actually did.
Nerd.
I spent most of English class writing notes for my side pieces, mostly because we read stuff that I already read because my school district was going through curriculum change when I went through high school, so I read like Of Mice and Men each year, and. I hate Of Mice and Men. I hate it so much.
She's lying, Katie. Don't let her lie to you. She loves it.
She
read it so much.
But that is a different story, and that will take all of the time that we have for the podcast to tell. So I used to just spend English class doing it because as long as you're writing in English class, it looks like you're taking notes for English class. This was the easiest way to get away with it. You couldn't do it in French because my teacher walked around the moment she saw anything in English. She was like, excuse me. I think if I made notes in French, she'd be okay with it. But I did them in English, so she was like, no, en français.
My worst time was when I was in a class and they were doing their like scared straight, don't drink and drive stuff. And like they have all the packets out. And I was like writing down notes for a story like, ooh, if my character gets in an accident because he's driving drunk, this is like, glorifying everything they were saying to make it like a nice story. And they were like, what are you doing? Please, you're missing the point of this class. Right?
All right. Never have I ever had dreams about my work.
I'd say that's, I think dreams inspired my work. So I'm going to go with yes for that. There definitely have been scenes, including scenes in Chasing Faye, that have been pulled that started out as a dream and then were, I suppose, stretched out and turned into chapters.
My dreams are too weird to be brought into my work. And like, there's one I had as a kid where we had an animatronic Big Bird, and you like put a tape in his ass and he read you a story, and he like came to life and chased me around the house.
Okay, wait, where does the dream start? What point was like a weird childhood, and what part was a dream?
I was like really afraid of this animatronic Big Bird because he used to go off in the middle of the night. And would just like, he wouldn't read anything. So like his jaw would just start hanging down and his eyes would move all weird because like, whatever search went through it. And I was
Friday Night at Freddy's or whatever. That's just like your worst dream then.
That's like my childhood recurring nightmare. And then
don't schedule any of your birthdays at Chuck E. Cheese.
Please do not. Thank you.
Well, that was like,
Sesame Place at all. Then like high school, I had like really violent dreams where like my friends were all chasing me and trying to kill me. And I mean, that one I could probably put into my work because I write some really weird shit. But like the animatronic Big Bird stays in my childhood as a terrible memory.
I used to have a reoccurring nightmare where a member of the Blue Man Group was trying to kill me. Like, he would come up to the door and like knock on the door and be like, let me in, I'm gonna kill you. And like, I'd be like, no. And then my mom would be like, all right, time to go to school. So I'd have to walk out to my bus stop, and then he'd be like, ha ha ha, I'm gonna kill you now. And then he would chase me into a lake that doesn't exist, and I'd swim away, and he'd catch me and kill me. And I would do like the like cartoon angel above my body and like wake up, and I wouldn't even be scared, I would just be pissed off. I'd be like, that motherfucker got me again.
To be fair, like, have you ever been to a Blue Man Group concert?
No, they're fucking terrifying. Like, they still give me the heebie-jeebies.
They are. Like, my sister and I went to one, and like they come out like far into the audience, and like their eyes are really wide open, like zombie wide open kind of eyes, and it is really scary. Like,
hey guys, if you want to see me have a panic attack, take me to a Blue Man Group concert. I would die.
There is exactly
before or after we get creepy dolls.
Chuck, I fucking hate both of you so much.
Is exactly one dream that I remember vividly, and it's a dream only because I had posted it to Facebook as soon as I woke up because it was so intense. And the only thing that I can remember about it right now is needed to go and find the lost and found box in an opium den that Betty White was the pimp of, and then having to jump out of a helicopter with a bunch of lesbians.
I mean, I would believe that Betty White is a pimp of an opium den, so.
Yeah. I like Hangover 4. Is it that your pitch for Hangover 4?
It comes around. So, yeah, next time that it comes around in my Facebook memories, I'll tag you guys in it because it's wild.
Wonderful.
Right. For the next one, this is why I love this game. Then we go off on weird tangents. Yeah. Never have I ever been caught without a notebook and a pen.
Never. Never happened.
Never.
I've always got one in my bag.
That's why she organizes her book bag so well, to make sure. Yes.
Never have I ever texted a friend a story note just so I'd have it later.
Oh, hey, look.
Yes, that's happened. That happens. I text my boyfriend all the time. It'll be like, I'm in the middle of class and like, remember this for me. He's like, what? Just keep this and I'll get it back in a minute.
Like I'll text my sister like notes. And cause like usually it'll be like, I listen to a song and it'll spark an idea and I'll be like, hear it. And I'll text it to her. And then she'll like, I'll already get home, see that she still hasn't responded yet, but it still works. And then she'll like come home and be like, why are you texting me sad shit while I'm at work, dude? Like, can't be making me cry like, while I'm trying to talk to a person like that's here to get their dog checked out. Like,
I love texting Jessica. So what if I killed this person? Or what if this like wild, crazy magic happened and like she turned into a monster?
Is it because I come back with, what if you killed these 5 people and it was because she became a monster?
Always great.
Or like when I was talking to my sister and I was like, Sam, I think I need to cut this character. I think I have too many characters. And she just looked me dead in the eye and went, Dan Davis, I don't feel so good. And then snapped. I was like, oh my God. it was like the same day that we had gone and seen like Avengers. Like, I was like, what is wrong with you?
Brutal and I love her.
Yeah.
last one's mine. Yeah. I didn't even see. Never have I ever cried from feedback in a bad review or workshop.
Not yet. I haven't gotten that milestone yet, but I expect that I will when it comes.
But it sounds like you've got plans.
Come be in a workshop with me. Okay. Make everyone cry. It's my favorite. It's like, I don't consider my feedback done until someone cries.
Just cry because of you.
Excuse me. I have never cried because of you in a workshop.
Yeah. Well, Jessica, you don't cry.
It's true.
Yeah, I was like, you don't count. Like, you're an actor. Like, my perfect record of like,
with one exception, I have never cried in workshop.
Oh, when you're writing about your dog.
That's yeah, cool. When I did the piece about the little girl that loses her dog, and to be fair, I made people cry when I read that at open mic. So it's a very moving piece.
That's right. I didn't cry because I wasn't there. All right.
Back to questions.
You were successful. Congratulations.
Yes.
You were at 4 out of 10, so you do not need to spoil your own book.
But when you inevitably cry from bad feedback or a bad workshop, you have to come back and spoil something for your book.
Spoil it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, for book 2, we'll come back and then you can be like, all right, I cried at a...
Sounds good to me.
Someone showed up at my workshop and just started yelling. And I'm like, oh yeah, that very handsome man.
Someone just walked into the room and played the Sarah McLachlan song.
Yeah.
And just showed us pictures of sad puppies for like 3 hours.
It was more of an art piece, less of feedback. I really don't know what was going on.
All right. So what is, in your experience, the best way to market your books?
Interesting. I'm learning about kind of the marketing process as I go a little bit. I had a bit of guidance from my publisher, but a lot of the marketing side's on me. I think what I've had the most success with is kind of continuing to be active on social media and on my website. I have a website called Fluff About Fantasy, where it's geared towards teaching a young writer is kind of the genre specific craft of writing fantasy in a way that's, you know, understandable and easily digestible for people who want to start writing. And I feel like I'm able to use a lot of scenes and kind of ideas I'm having as lessons of what to do and what not to do. And I think that intrigues people. I'm pretty active across several social media platforms, and I try to be super personable. I love Twitter. I love the writing community on Twitter. They're amazing. I love them all. I've made so many great friends. I'm involved in a couple of writing groups through there, and that's really helped me make some solid connections. I really found my voice there. I'm an introvert. I'm very quiet. It might not seem that way, but I have trouble speaking and articulating what I'm trying to say. And so kind of being able to kind of put myself out there and kind of receive feedback and receive, you know, positive affirmation has been really helpful to me and kind of gives me confidence that I have something, you know, good in my hands.
Nice.
Yeah. I love writer Twitter for the opposite reason, because I feel like it's all snarky and angry all the time. And they just like,
you must be on the wrong side of it.
I feel like I'm that like meme of just like eating my cereal, watching like the drama on like writer Twitter to be like,
why are those the noises you make while eating cereal, Dan?
Because I'm eating cereal Lucky Charms, and they're magically delicious.
Oh, I eat Lucky Charms. I love Lucky Charms. I'm in my 30s. I should not be eating Lucky Charms for breakfast.
But you're diabetic. You shouldn't be eating Lucky Charms for breakfast.
That's what I was going to say, Maggie.
I'm not diabetic yet, so I can still have Lucky Charms.
Bitch, I watched you once eat cereal. Take one spoonful of cereal, one spoonful of sugar. One spoonful of cereal, one spoonful of sugar. Don't tell me you're not diabetic yet.
Yeah. So, all right. So, during our MFA, Katie, we go out to Lake Tahoe and we have these week-long residencies and it's very intense. And I get very hungry when I'm stressed. I have that like building appetite as I get more and more inundated with things to do. And so like every morning I'd wake up and I'd go down for breakfast and have like 4 or 5 bowls of cereal, some bagels, like some milk, you know, like just like really put a lot of food into me while I was there. And it was always my goal to finish off one of the canisters of cereal at the college. So one residency, they didn't have Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which was usually like my usual go-to for finishing them off. And they had Honey Nut Cheerios, which I'm not especially a fan of without a little sugar on them. And Maggie is not wrong. I absolutely took a spoonful of Cheerios and a spoonful of sugar. I just put them on and ate them that way.
Damn. I'm not that. I was never that way during residency. I was the opposite. I was like, if I eat, that's wasted energy that I could be used towards writing. So I would always show up back home like 20 pounds lighter. The only thing I would do was drink. So just like, show up home like, look, I'm real thin. Am I educated yet? Is this education looks like?
I absolutely hit that my last residency because it was the residency that I had to do my thesis defense, and I like barely ate anything, and I was like, oh, this is a sign. This is not good. Like I didn't like, eat breakfast.
This is what Davis looks like all the time.
Yeah, I didn't eat breakfast. I didn't eat lunch. I think it was Lala that was like, put some food in you before I smack you. You know, like, I will knock you down a peg, eat something. I'm like, but I'm not. She's like, yes, you are. No, put some food. Like, but I'm glad that we had like so many people like that, especially in WCYA who were just like moms. Because you had like such a range of moms in WCYA. Moms. They were all literally moms, but they have like the mom personality, you know? So they're like, did I just tell you to eat? Have you finished what you put on your plate? You're not getting up.
Yeah.
But like when my anxiety gets out of hand, I need that. So it's like it works, you know. It whatever.
That's what's important in a writing community is someone that is going to like give you tough love when you're
But it really is like only in workshop, but just to kind of like light a fire under your ass, like did you do your 2,000 words today? No, okay, then you can't go outside and play, and you can't play Dragon Age on your computer for the next 4 hours.
I've been playing FIFA lately because there's manager mode, and I was like, how bad of a team can I make and still win? And like, but I'm writing about soccer, so then I justify it by being like, no, this is research. What do you mean? I'm not just playing video games. And then my sister's like, oh, yes, wow, congratulations, your fake team has done nothing. Get back to work. I'm like, oh, okay. But That coming from my sister who plays video games all the time. Anyway, so my next question, I'm curious if this is what you were referencing when we were talking about dreams, Katie, because in the demon realm, you have like some very serious nightmare fuel as far as like what the demons look like and what they do. So, you know, everything that's down there is pretty fucking awful.
Yes.
It's almost like no one lives there. For a reason. And so I was wondering like where that inspiration came from, as well as like kind of all the inspiration, like for all the realms, but you know, the demons ones were the ones that like caught my eye for wanting to know where your inspiration came from.
So the demon realm comes from, it's actually really interesting. When I was first working on the draft, on my first drafts, I kind of had a vision for how the world looked, kind of, you know, the red and black sky and this really dark forest kind of space where, you know, it's endless. It goes on for miles. You can't see where it ends, and it's almost like it doesn't end.
Now.
And that I had an idea for kind of how the world looked, but I didn't have really a good sense of kind of the story of the demons and how they kind of came to be in that space and kind of their appearance. So I actually around my second draft, when my boyfriend did the beta reading, he took a real interest in the demon realm and actually wrote a whole lore for the area. I was like, hey, what do you think of this? Like, what is this? What do you think this would look like? And I had never seen him kind of get so inspired by something like that before. When I read it, I was like, this is really interesting. There's levels of, I'm trying to pull up the document that, he did for me. There's kind of these different stages of demons. The younger ones are, their magic is much more wild and chaotic, and that was how I imagined the first demons that Grace encounters and, you know, Aiden encounters. And I wanted something that was, I wanted a kind of a look that was both ugly and, you know, something that you couldn't kind of take your eyes off of. Something it was dark but intriguing, almost like you wanted to know and understand more. I feel like I'm babbling on a little bit, but kind of that's kind of where that came from. It was kind of a combination of a vision for the scenery, and then kind of the rest of the demon realm came very slowly as the writing process progressed.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was like, yeah, no, the demon realm's like, it's interesting to, so like how you have the demon realm, like, you know, it's there and it's like kind of a lingering darkness. So when they do finally get there, I was like, oh, here we go.
Yes. So, I wanted it to be like that. I wanted this, it's a very forbidden space. Like one, you know, the mortal realm has almost existed for a period of time where the lower realm doesn't exist. And the upper realm is very scared. You know, the Fae are very scared of that place, that it's almost not talked about, not studied at all. And so Grace is entering into a space that hasn't been touched for a long period of time by, you know, any singular human. So there's this apprehension and fear that comes with it. But definitely there's a little bit of intrigue there, I think, for Grace, where she's like, you know, what is actually behind, you know, behind this wall?
Yeah, because like, so the writer Lydia Yukovich always talks about like lineal spaces. And it, like, I thought it was interesting how like you have this, like, in between space, right? Like lineal spaces, it's the space in between two things, but like you move that to like the lower realm, so it's not actually between the two spaces, it's like to the side, but it's still there. That it's something that like both of the other realms share, that in the sense of like a fear of it. And so then to explore it was, I was like, interesting. I was like, no, don't leave yet. Who cares if you're almost dead?
Well, I promise in the books, I'm planning on taking Grace back to the lower realm for a period of time, so you'll definitely see more of it.
Oh, hell yeah. I was thinking of like when I played D&D, I was like, I'm the motherfucker that in the party that's like, I think this is nice. We should hang out here. While the rest of the party is like, we're in the middle of a dungeon. Shut up. We're leaving. We haven't taken a long rest in 4 seconds. Shut the hell up. We're leaving. It's like, we should explore the space more. Let's set up a bed and breakfast. Like, we would dominate the market if we set up some businesses down here.
A bed and breakfast in the demon realm.
Love it.
Oh, that'd be a good book.
That'd be good. That probably D&D campaign too.
Right? It would.
Like, you know, the party shows up expecting monsters, and they're just like, oh no, here, come on, take a nice rest.
How do you like your eggs?
Yeah, like, just like
scrambled or hell fried?
Hell fried.
Yeah. Because
don't forget, you are a murder hobos. You literally killed these people for no reason.
Just imagine having to have breakfast next to the soul of the bandits you guys killed like 10 levels ago.
Hey man, I mean, how was I to know you weren't actually the bandits the whole time?
I mean, at least you'd know your food was never undercooked if you had a bed and breakfast in hell, right?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Everything's, the barbecue must be amazing.
Ooh, yeah. So what was your favorite scene in Chasing Faye to craft?
Well, that's hard because I've got two that were my favorites too. So I'll do a little bit about both. The first one that really stood out to me was the moment where Grace steps across the barrier from the mortal realm into the Fey world. Mm-hmm. And that moment where she's on the mountain looking over at this world that suddenly you've got bright color that you can practically feel kind of the magic in the air. And that was my favorite moment to create, because just kind of capture all those senses. And, you know, even though she's apprehensive and she's, you know, determined to get through this adventure, there is still that sense of wonder there that I mm-hmm. think was really fun to weave together. And then the second one is actually a part of Grace's and Aiden's journey in the upper realm, when they travel to the House of Darkness and Grace meets Fallon for the first time. That's Fallon's is my favorite character. He's my child. And I love I'm totally, yeah. I love his sarcasm, his, you know, he's another one of those characters, those dark and intriguing, but way more intriguing. There's a lot of emotions for me tied up in him, and I'm you will see him again later because he's my favorite.
Oh, nice. A classic. You love to see it when someone like falls in love with like the most toxic character that they're writing. Like, you're like, oh, they're my favorite. And it's like, they're really bad. They are terrifying. Yeah. Right.
But the toxic characters are so much fun to write because it lets you, for the most part, but like most people I know that write toxic characters are not toxic people themselves. And so it lets them explore these traits that they aren't going to like take out into the world. And it's also like,
we are the same people. No, I'm kidding.
Excuse me. I love each and every one of them. Minus like two of them. Okay. All right. But it is really a lot of fun to write those toxic characters and those like very villainous characters, mm-hmm. just because it's so fun to explore that dark side, especially when you are a good person.
And it's so much to write characters who don't care about what they're saying. You know, yes. Like there's something about this freedom of voice and freedom of movement that you can create in a character that is, I don't know, it's just a really kind of transformative experience to write a person like that who can
absolutely
do whatever whenever.
Yeah, like especially as an introvert, like writing those evil characters often lets you explore being a little extroverted. So like you have this character that just walks into a room and doesn't care, and you're like, that must be nice, you sack of shit. Like you just come on, you know, like You like you grow to hate them, but you hate them for different reasons than like your characters or your readers might hate them, because you're like, yeah, I would love to go to a party too, but all right.
And, like, I'd love to walk into a room and, you know, people are looking at me and just like walk straight on through without like thinking about it and overanalyzing everything.
Exactly. And it's like, that's traits that I don't personally have. So it would be nice to have those, you know, whatever.
That's why when, you know, whenever you play D&D with introverts, they always immediately start like, what's my character? Charismatic as hell. They don't give a fuck. Like, and you're like, yeah, okay, man. Like, you could do this too, you know.
I have two D&D characters right now, one of which is going through a huge emotional crisis, and the other one that I started as neutral evil, and I'm like slowly working my way toward like true evil, and my sister's the DM for that campaign, and she's like, no, absolutely not. I'm like, I can do it. I'm gonna roll. I'm gonna burn down the whole forest. Look at that, rolling. Oh, I didn't get it this time, but you watch. Next time, I'm gonna burn down the whole forest.
Too soon. Just have a gender reveal. With, like,
yes.
Oh god. I have, you know, two queer depressed characters in one hand, and in the other, grandmother. What does that say about me?
I do think it's funny. Both of the characters I play right now are queer.
Wait, yeah, Katie, do you play D&D?
I've been told that I would enjoy it, and I played once, but not all the way through. It was an impromptu get together in my freshman dorm basement. But I feel like I would enjoy playing D&D. I really need to find some groups to play with.
Surprised that you don't play D&D.
Most people aren't.
I just had an idea for a podcast. I'll DM for all of our guests. Just get all of our guests back and make them play D&D. Perfect.
That sounds great.
Yeah. I'm down for this, and now I have a whole bunch of emails to send. But okay. But no, like actually, like from a writing standpoint, from a craft standpoint, I really do love D&D, especially now that I have like friends that I like to play with, because I used to play in high school, but I played with my sister's friends, and they're like very aggressive at the table.
Ugh.
And yeah, so it like it wasn't fun for me to just constantly get yelled at for 3 hours. It's not fun for anybody to get yelled at for 3 hours. Imagine that.
Sorry.
And but like as a writer and running my own campaign, you know, like Maggie had said this before when she like first started DMing, that she's like, it's actually like really stimulating me to create things, and then I'm getting ideas for my own work while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And even things that like your characters might do or the other players might do, because it's so spontaneous and you don't have a set script in front of you, it like forces that creative brain to work its way through other plot points. Mm-hmm. So it's so helpful to get you through things, whether you are in complete control or you're one of the players. And I really appreciate the groups that I have to play with now.
Cool, I'll have
on a less serious note, this brings us.
Speaking of games.
Speaking of games.
Yeah, speaking of games.
Segways.
This is probably like the only sensible segue I've ever done in the history of this podcast. But speaking of games, that brings us to game number two, which is whose first blurb line is it anyway? Normally we play whose first line is it anyway, but I couldn't find the first lines to these books. So we will read the first line of a current best, the first line of the blurb of a current bestseller without the character names, and you try to guess which book it belongs to. Nice and easy, right?
Okay. Maybe.
There's no consequences this time.
Yeah, there's no consequences. But you either do it or you don't.
I'm absolutely going to fail at this.
What, you mean you haven't read The House of Bees, the new nonfiction scientific study that's in... No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, so let me clarify. They're all currently on the New York Times YA bestseller list.
All right, that's good. That's a good start.
Yeah. All right, so I'll go first with Life is Good for Person A and Person B.
Life. All right. Very, very non-specific. I like it.
Mm-hmm. You'll love to see it.
Yes. Oh God. I have no idea.
That is The Lost Book of the White by Cassandra Clare. The first line of the blurb is, Life is good for Magnus Bane and Alec Lightwood.
I'm so disappointed in myself. I love Cassandra Clare. She's wonderful.
To be fair, that one really relies on the character.
On the name. Yeah.
Magnus. Oh, you mean Magnus Bane and Alec Lightwood are specific names that would help?
I will say, like, a lot of the ones that I went through, you know, the opening line is like six lines long, and like the names aren't in there. So to me, I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally recognizable. But like the Cassandra Clare one, I was like, that's really short. And like every line after that in the blurb has something that absolutely gives it away. So I'm like, she's got to do it with this. That's a shame. So
just make her terrified for the rest of this game.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay, so the second one is, after narrowly escaping death at the hands of the Dame Blanches, Person A, Person B, Person C, and Person D are on the run from Coven, Kingdom, and Church. Fugitives with nowhere to hide.
Ooh.
So many people on that one.
That's interesting. It sounds like something I would enjoy reading. But, I'm just going to do a shot in the dark here. We Were Liars?
No,
I didn't think so.
It is actually Blood and Honey by Shelby Mahurin. Mahurin.
I recommend that series. It's Serpent and Dove followed by Blood and Honey. And Serpent and Dove for like the first... seven chapters is a little slow because there's a lot of world building, but then it like really kicks off and it's a really great story. I highly recommend it, especially if you're into fantasy.
Cool. I'll have to take a look at it.
The next one, 16-year-old Person A moves between two worlds, the poor neighborhood where she lives and the fancy suburban prep school she attends.
Oh, I know this one. This is The Hate You Give.
Yes!
That was a fantastic book. I loved it.
Yes, it is. I listened to it, and I was in my car when her friend gets shot, and I just started crying in traffic. I'm like, I have to pull over.
I was in a similar boat. I was listening to it on a road trip with my family, and I just started crying in the back seat at 10 o'clock at night. Like, my family just like, doop, 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 and like turns around, and I'm like bawling my eyes out.
Oh,
I was like, it's fine. And then my dad, when we were in the hotel, my dad was like, turn that down, because I was like still listening to it in the hotel. Like, all right, so the next one, you gave me all the oh, never mind. Okay, you gave me two short ones.
I went in order. Okay, this is the order that they appear on the list.
You're like, I'm gonna make Dan look like an asshole. So Power is Intoxicating.
Okay.
That's it?
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, Maggie.
Wow,
great.
Jessica. You're really fucking Dan over there.
It could be so many books. Power is Intoxicating is pretty much a theme of a lot of things. I don't know. No idea.
American Royals 2, Majesty by Catherine McGee.
All right.
Yeah. You're making me look like a jerk, Jess, because I'm just coming out with like...
You got a longer one later. At least you don't have the poetry one.
Fair.
This one is...
Oh, I love that book.
The story that I thought was my life didn't start on the day I was born.
Mm. One of Us is Lying?
No. This one is Punching the Air by Ibi Zoboi and Yusuf Salam.
Okay, really I've never heard of that book.
Oh, it's super good.
So I am going to be a little upset if you don't get this one.
This is the...
Jessica.
Pay close attention and you might solve this.
Ooh. Let me guess, this is the one of us is lying.
Yes.
What am I? I'm like 2 for 6. This is terrible.
For what it's worth, I would be 1 for 6 right now. The only All one right. I would have gotten is The Hate You Give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel better.
Yeah. These are,
even when we play with the first line of the book, these are very hard, you know, yeah, just okay. to kind of...
Well, good. That makes me feel better about myself.
Yeah. I was like, because it's like, I don't know, I feel like books nowadays don't have, like, Call Me Ishmael as the first line of a book, because if you tried to do that, your editor would be like, this doesn't tell the reader anything. And I'd be like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. Like, all right. But like,
I've give never... it 5 chapters. They'll learn all about the American whaling system.
Yeah. Like, but I don't, yeah, I've never read that book. I don't know what that book is, but I still know like what that's the first line to, or it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Never read that book. Still know what's the first line to. And then I'm like, even if you gave me my favorite book, the first line, I'd probably still be like, ah, fuck if I know, man. They, like, your favorite book, Lullaby, that is tattooed on your chest. That is the opening line. Like,
oh, well.
Yeah. But, all right. When his traditional Latinx family has problems accepting his gender, person A becomes determined to prove himself a real brujo.
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 I feel like... I saw this the other day. I feel like this is on my to be read list, my endless to be read list.
TBRs are a myth. They don't actually exist. They're just
to be honest, that's mythical. So fair.
Yeah, like they're mythical. Never they have no concrete existence.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Two in a row.
I was like, oh snap, you're so close. No, keep saying it.
All right. Let's just skip a second. Person A has a plan for a better future. Survive high school, win a scholarship, and get out.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. It sounds like something I would love to read, but I have no idea what it is.
It sounds like it should be the blurb for my book. Holy shit.
It is The Inheritance Games by Jennifer Lynn Barnes.
I am writing that down.
I'm writing that down too.
You're welcome, Jennifer.
Yeah. Congrats on the 2 buys.
All right. And the last one, person A doesn't know her real name.
Doesn't know her real name.
The inherent.
I don't know this one.
This is Hawk by James Patterson.
Oh, I love James Patterson. He's wonderful. What? He said, what's the title of the book? He said,
Hawk.
Hawk? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I met James Patterson when I was at the CBWI.
Oh, very nice.
It was really cool. I was like, oh, hey. And like, because everyone else was like fawning over him. And I was like, oh, hey, my grandma really likes you.
The best compliment, I think.
Yeah. Well, like he fucking writes everything. I'm not going to tell him anything he hasn't heard before. I was just like, oh, yeah, hey, my grandma really likes you. And then I sat down at the bar and, well, now it's embarrassing because now her name just ran out of my mind. Who wrote Crank?
Ellie Hopkins.
Hopkins, yeah.
Ellen Hopkins, not Ellie.
Ellen Hopkins Ellie? Sat down.
Yeah. I don't know why Ellie? I got Ellie.
Wait, you on a first name basis? Like, you got nicknames
for her? She did come visit the school when I was first year at
Yeah, but I ran into her and she sat down at the bar next to me and we talked. And I was like, actually, I go to SNC. And she was like, I live down the mountain. And I was like, oh, fuck. Hey, what up? Then we closed out the bar together.
Oh my god.
that tracks for you, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tracks for me. I didn't expect it to track for Ellen Hopkins. Like, She paid my tab and I walked her back to her room and was like, have a good night.
That's nice.
And I stumbled back to my Airbnb. Cause... anyway.
Wow.
Anyway.
Back to questions.
All right. So, Katie, I know you have a sister. She's on your website. And you've said in other interviews how important you think siblings can be to characters because it really gives a character... you know, some growth and like usually the relationship with their character is important. Obviously, Leo is like super fucking important to the story. So I'm curious, what inspired you to have Grace have a brother, like as opposed to a sister, I guess is what I'm asking there. And then like, or is there someone that Leo is inspired by? And furthermore, like in Chasing Faye, is there anyone that like in your life that they recognize themselves in your book? Like they're like, oh, wow, look, that me.
So Leo is was inspired by an old friend of mine who I was really close with in high school. He was very much like an older brother to me. And after some, you know, unfortunately typical high school drama things, we lost contact with each other. Mm-hmm. And he was somebody really, really important in my life because I felt like I had somebody to kind of believe in, to look up to. You know, I'm the oldest sibling, and you know, there's a very different dynamic kind of being the one who is looked up to versus looking up to someone else, and having that, you know, friendship in my life kind of took the load off of me a little bit during a very stressful period of my life. And when we lost touch, I was tired of kind of all this emotion and this pain and the fact that, you know, that he walked out on me kind of during a important time in my life. So I wanted to capture the good that, you know, the good of that friendship that we had. But kind of find a way to move on kind of throughout the story. There's a reason that Leo is dead to begin with. Mm-hmm. Because Grace has got to go through this kind of this emotional journey to opening herself up to trusting people again. And to understand that, you know, you may not have all the answers of why things fall apart, but, you know, you have to kind of accept that and make a life for yourself after, kind of in that period afterwards. So that's, Leo was a very important character for me kind of through the writing process of this, is kind of exploring those feelings of, you know, of sadness and grief and pain and then eventual acceptance. So the second part of your question, I think a lot of my characters have traits from people in my life that I've kind of shuffled them around and mixed them together. So no one character is exactly the same as one person, because I don't want to people recognizing too many of the traits in my story is the main part of that. But I haven't had anyone come up to me yet and recognize it yet, but I imagine it's only a matter of time.
They're like, oh, this person's a real jerk. And you're like, yeah, not a fan. Meanwhile, I just name drop my friends and my book. I'm just like, hey, look, this person's Greg Gonzalez. I'm gonna literally name him that. Like, fuck him, I don't give a shit. Let's see if he actually reads it. Call me out, Greg.
Oh, I love like, that.
No.
Yeah.
You're like, that's you right down to the beard, friend. Gotta go. Bye. Yeah,
I just thought of something. The only character that someone has recognized is there's a character, a young character near the end of the book that is based off of my little sister when she was younger, and kind of how she is now, but she, you know, it's a very, very bouncy, very alive character. And she knew she was part of the writing process on that one. I was like, I need this little character to pop in here. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what about me? It's like, okay, I'll rename it, make them smaller. And yeah, definitely you.
Yeah. No, see, that was my way of trying to get you to spoil something. So
Yes.
Was asking this question. I was like, all right, she hasn't spoiled her book yet. Maybe I can get tricked. I presumed that while we
got close.
I was close. I almost got her, girls. I tried my best.
You've been so good about that lately, Dan.
Yeah.
So do you have a writing group? And if so, how did you find them?
I'm involved in one writing group on Twitter. We've got a big group chat going. I just kind of found them. I was browsing Twitter one day and someone was putting in a call for a writing group of, you know, all genres, all ages. And I was like, you know, I need a group. I'd love to have, you know, some people to keep me honest, keep me working on this book. Mm-hmm. I was in the revising stage, I think, at this point, and I needed someone to tell me to keep going as it was getting, you know, kind of when you get down to the nitty gritty of revising. Sometimes there are some days you're like, do I have to do this? Do I need to do this today? But I wanted people who were going to, you know, keep me going. Mm-hmm. And so I joined them, I guess. I don't even know how long it's been. It's definitely been 6 months or more for sure. And we, you know, we swap ideas, we share each other's, you know, posts about different things and book links and all that. And I really enjoyed, I think I'm the youngest author in the group, but I've gotten a lot of great insight from people who are in all various stages of writing. And I really enjoyed it.
That's good.
And that's an important thing to have while writing.
Yeah,
definitely.
And then our last question, what did you find that was your hardest scene to write?
Oh God. I mean, the one that instinctually comes up for me is the nightmare sequence in the Lower Realm. Mm-hmm. There's this moment of, you know, you have the nightmare where Grace, you know, Grace is essentially watches her brother's death. And that was such a hard moment to create just from the emotional factor. But then having kind of the subsequent chapters after that where she really has to come. This is really the first time she really comes to terms with the fact that her brother is dead. And then he's not coming back. And there's nothing she can do to kind of turn back the clock and make it happen differently. And that's something that in life, I think, is whenever it comes to death, it comes to loss, and, you know, and it's very applicable in a bunch of different moments. And I think that was the hardest for me to write just with my life experience. I've experienced loss. I've experienced in, you know, all different facets, I suppose, and kind of having that release moment and creating that and writing it and seeing, you know, this tension that's been building the whole time kind of reach its peak and then break apart. It's something that really touched me while I was writing it. And I definitely shed a couple tears over that moment.
Ouch.
I was like, whoa. Man, we really went with a trifecta of bummer, bummer, bummer. Yeah, we should put this in the middle.
Well, that about does it for tonight. We like to finish the episode the same way with every author that comes on the show. Are there any publishing professionals that you'd like to thank today? Anyone from agents to editors, someone that you think deserves a special shout out?
Absolutely. I'd like to first of all thank my publisher, New Degree Press, for taking a chance on me, and especially to Brian Bees for sitting down with me in December in the middle of my final exams and, you know, laying out how the submission process worked and how the publishing process worked at this particular small press. I want to thank my editor, Christy Carter, who is just the most fantastic human that I've met throughout this whole thing, for really understanding the draft and what, you know, what I was trying to do with this book and taking it to a level that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do with my own self revision, you know, just continual. She has been just a fantastic pillar in the whole publishing process. And I also want to thank my cover designer, Milan Kostevsky, who put together, who took my cover vision and took it to an entirely new level that I could not have imagined. As soon as I saw it, I was like, that's the one. That's it. Don't make any changes to it because that's what I want. So yeah, I think that's all of my professional thank yous.
Lovely.
Wonderful.
That is the first time that we've gotten a like cover artist. Thank you. So congratulations.
Oh, no. Rebecca Donnelly thanked hers. Yeah, this is definitely the second one. It's definitely not something that happens often. Mm-hmm. So I do want to say thank you for thanking your cover artist, because, you know, like, we don't judge books by a cover is such a lie. And so, like, thank you for making my book beautiful. Yeah, it's an absolute lie. So thank you for making my book beautiful, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that is all the time that we have for tonight. Tune in next time for more great book discussions. Katie, if you wanted to plug any of your social medias where our listeners can find you.
All right, yes, I do. All right, I'm on my website, fluffaboutfantasy.com. I'm on Twitter at Katie Hammer, and Facebook and Instagram are Fluff About Fantasy. So I hope you will check me out.
Wonderful. We will check out the links in the show notes to follow the show or connect with us personally on Facebook and Twitter. And we'll, of course, have links for all of Katie's socials and her website. And don't forget to visit bookedallnight.blog for more book reviews, blog tours, and roundups. Whether you're listening on Spotify, iTunes, or Google Podcasts, make sure you drop a 5-star review of the show. Good night, my little Betty White pimps.
Really?
I panicked. I've got
3 notes in here for you to figure out your noun. You went with Betty White pimps.
I have no excuse. Just Betty White.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Katie, and we hope that for your next book, you think of us and come on back. This was very
nice. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.